Part two of the Shiurim of Rav Hirsch on Tefillin. This can be found, the contents of this shiur can all be found in Collected Writings, Volume 3, pages 149 through 161. First, we'll talk about the design of the boxes, the batim, as they're called, the bases. So the boxes are the batim, the bases, that's a flat base around, wider than the box itself. That's called the titura by Chazal. And the loops, also as designed as an extension of the bases, so you can put straps in, that's called the ma'varta. All of these parts of the tefillin are all ma'akev. They all are essential. If any of them are missing, your tefillin are disqualified, they're puzzle. All of them are halacha l'moshe mi'sinai. We receive them as tradition from Har Sinai. Their shape and the structure are not just to enable getting the parashas in there. If there would be so, there wouldn't be halachas that would disqualify them. It would just be an inconvenient way to make them. But the halachas, exactly the way they're designed, are essential. So there must be something to them that we can learn that's symbolic about how they tie in to the message of what's inside, no doubt. So Hirsch explains as follows. Just like the Aron Kodesh in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, whose purpose was to receive and guard the Torah, he has a lengthy essay on that later in the Collected Writings and also in his commentary to the Torah about the Aron Kodesh's function, both to receive the Shechina, that's the wings that receive the Divine Presence, and also that it's guarding and protecting what's inside. Just like that was the purpose of the Aron Kodesh, to protect the Torah, receive the Torah, the tefillin are a miniature Aron Kodesh, he suggests. All the components together teach us how to perpetuate the contents of the Torah and to translate them into reality. The parshas inside and the design of the batim show us what we should devote all our energies of our head and our hand, our thought and action to. It shows us how to, show us what exactly is the way to devote all of our energies and our head and hand, our thought and our actions. So the batim, Hirsch explains as follows. We each need to build a house for the Torah and the mitzvos. He has a beautiful explanation here with many psukim on page 150. You could look it up there. Each person needs to build a house for the Torah and the mitzvos on earth. Having a Beis HaMikdash is beautiful. That's a lovely location where the nation has the Shechina resting as its central location. But every Jew, every individual Jew, needs to establish in his own house, within his own circle, that it should be a place where the Torah finds a home in his everyday activities. That's the message of the batim. But it goes beyond that. The titura, that's the base where it comes in for a landing. And Hirsch explains as follows. Just as the base of the tefillin are very intentionally the foundation of the batim, it was designed that way, so too the Torah must have its place here on earth. Other religions look at this world as a cursed place where the Satan is in charge. Judaism says just the opposite. This earth is a very holy place. It can become holy if we do that. Iker Shechina betachtonim, Hirsch dwells on this phrase many times over. It's in Bereishis Rabbah, Perek Yates. The task of Judaism is to wed earthly, transient things to the immutable, eternal, to quote Hirsch. This world becomes infused with eternity when the Torah dictates how to live in this world. If the truth of Torah is realized on earth, then the earth will be more divine than the heavens itself. Then we have the Marvarta. Marvarta is the loop that helps us tie the tefillin to our arm. It's not enough to have a mikdash where the Torah is housed in the Aron Kodesh, which comes in for a landing somewhere on earth. But no, every individual Jew must tie this to himself, to his body, to his actions. The Torah must be upheld by every Jew. As Hirsch quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu lamented that the people said they've done so much for the Torah. They built the Beis HaMikdash. They said, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem. They're talking about the Beis HaMikdash. Look, we have God here. We built the Beis HaMikdash for Hashem. And Yirmiyahu says, but they forgot. Heichal Hashem, Hema, they, the people themselves, should have translated it into becoming themselves a temple for Hashem, living by the Torah, not just having a place somewhere on earth which is holy. Your lives, your home, your body, your actions should all become the temple of Hashem, where the Torah resides. If we dedicate our bodies and our souls to the Torah, the Shekhinah will dwell in the hearts and bodies who strive towards it. Just like the Badim should never be removed from the Aron HaKodesh, they extend past the Kodesh HaKodashim, and they're reaching beyond the Holy of Holies into the life beyond where the holiest place is, where the Aron Kodesh is. So too the Tefillin must have a Mavarta. The Tefillin must be connected to us, not just a place where the Torah resides, some holy article, but the message that's inside the Tefillin should be bound to our arms, to our minds, to our hearts. Now let's talk about some other details of the Tefillin. The Tefillin have to be merubos, they have to be perfectly square. So Hirsch explains the notion of square versus round. If things are left on their own and they grow organically, typically it'll become round. An orange grows round. Things go round. You don't see square rocks. Unless you're putting something into a mold when it grows, it's going to grow round. Things left on their own in the natural course of events will grow out from the center and form a circle or an oval of some sort. The only way you get a square is by somebody insisting that it should be that way. It's not natural. It's done by intention. And that's the point here. Just like the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash were, except for the menorah, were intentionally square. Everything is with sharp edges, which implies free will. Man with his free will live by the Torah. So to the Tefillin are telling us the message in the Torah, the message of the Tefillin, which is imbibe the notion of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that God is our liberator. Imbibe the notion of Matan Torah, that we are to, that because of that, accept God's will and live by his will. That's by man's choice and man's free will. So the Bedafka, they're specifically going to be square, the Tefillin. Another message in the Tefillin, another halacha, it has to be made, all the parts of the Tefillin have to be made from Behema Tahara, a kosher animal. So it's very interesting. Hirsch quotes a pasuk in Yecheskel, where Hashem tells Yecheskel about something similar. Echo es hamagila hazos. Eat this scroll. Bitnecha tochal umeecha tumole es hamagila hazos. Your belly should eat, and your guts should fill with this megillah. I don't know if it's figurative or literally, but the point is, let the Torah go all the way in, through and through. Let the teaching of God enter your mouth. The Torah's contents must be absorbed into our flesh and blood, giving nourishment to our mind and our emotions. So that's why it's dafka has to be edible, because it's a deep message. Let the Torah go all the way in, let it permeate all the way in, and bind that to your head, bind that to your arms, to your hands. Let that message go through and through till it influences everything, the way you think, the way you live. Now let's talk about the differences between the Tefillin Shel Yad and the Tefillin Shel Rosh. The Tefillin Shel Yad has one klaf where it's put into just one compartment, one piece of parchment, where all these four paragraphs that we mentioned in the previous year go in. But they're separate ideas, and yet they're all combined. So what is the Tefillin Shel Yad? The Tefillin Shel Yad represents the influence of these messages on us, on our actions, the way we live, on our actions, not just our thoughts. This is to teach us that the four various factors that our intelligence perceives, these four ideas which we'll enumerate in a moment, must become one single motive directing our will. That's why it's keneged halev, it's right opposite the heart. And our actions, that's the arm. And place one and the same imprint upon everything we do. For instance, We have, let's talk about the Shel Rosh in a minute and then compare that to the Shel Yad. Four separate thoughts. There are Kadesh, let's just review what we did in the previous year. Kadesh, which says that we accept the fact that Hashem was our Redeemer and we lovingly surrender and dedicate everything to Hashem. Hashem is our Redeemer and our Liberator. The next parasha of Ahoyaki Aviacha, which talks about that we have to give our firstborn. That's our subordination. We compare that to what Hashem did to the Egyptians. Hashem is the master and judge. And we don't want Hashem to have to judge us in a negative way. We dedicate ourselves and realize that all the gifts Hashem gave us, He's our master and our judge. We have to live up to the expectation of receiving all those gifts. Then we have Shema, which is our strengthening of our Emunah. And we are demonstrating and we are carrying out this love by dedicating everything we've got, all of our essence. V'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol me'odecha. V'hoyim Shemoa says we know that our future and our fate depends on whether or not we fulfill these requirements. So these are four separate ideas, both in the negative and in the positive. Be excited that Hashem has redeemed us. Dedicate yourself. Love Hashem for this. Be concerned that it could go bad, just like it did for the Mitzvah, if you don't appreciate everything you've got. And remember that fact for the nation. Our whole fate is in Hashem's hands. These are four separate concepts. But in action, it all merges into one. Each concept calls for separate comprehension, reflection, and recognition. As the Pasuk says, it's for the Tefillin Shel Rosh, it's the Lizikaron Ben Enecha. It's a remembrance. Each idea has to be thought of and processed separately. Each is a separate jewel in the totafos, which Hirsch calls the Jewish diadem, the Jewish crown. However, they all merge into one. It's called la'os al yadcha. It's one sign as the single motive for our actions. At every moment, the chesed of Hashem as our liberator and a redeemer and the din of Hashem as the master and judge together, they direct our actions. So both are simultaneously thought of, but it's not separate thought processes. When it comes to action, both ideas merge into one and push us into action. Now let's talk about the shin on the Shel Rosh. So there's a Rashi and a Tosfos, a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, as to what is the symbolism of the shin. Rashi, it's maybe the more famous one, Rashi tells us the shin plus the dalid, which is the knot at the back of the Shel Rosh, of the straps and the knot there, and the knot of the straps of the Shel Yad, which is leaning up against the of the dais, that forms the letter Yud. So you got shin and dalid Yud. They spell out the name Shakai. Tosfos rejects this. Tosfos has good questions there. You can look at it. Tosfos there on Menachos Daf Lamed Hey. And Tosfos basically says that Rashi doesn't have any sources for this. Instead, the shin is his own independent thing. But he doesn't really go on to talk about the symbolism. He just says it can't be that the shin and the dal yud are a set for the reasons that Tosfos gives there. Hirsch runs with that Tosfos and says the following. The shin is a letter all by itself. So there's a shin on our tefillin. The shin, just shin. What does this mean? What is the point of this shin? And he explains as follows. Let's say you want to describe a man. So there's two ways you can talk about a man using an adjective. You could say, the man is good, or the man who is good. When you say, the man is good, so you know about the man, and now you're saying something extra about the man. He's a person that you know already. He's the man you're talking about, and now you're teaching us he is good. But when you say the man who is good, the idea is you don't know anything about the man right now, and this is how you're going to come to know about him. The man who is good, knowing about his goodness gives you an idea of this man that you're trying to figure out. Who is he? What is he? The man is introduced to us as an unknown, only to be known in the term of his attributes. So too, the shin of the tefillin says exactly that idea. You know about Hashem by observing his attributes. The truth is his attributes are so without end, without limit, that we can't even describe that. So we just say she, that. It's an illusion. It's endless. That if you could only fathom, you know it's perfect, you know it's endless. That being that has endless attributes, that's Hashem, which you'll never really fathom. But the shin is as if you say he. It's an allusion to the one that you can't really describe, whose attributes are endless. That's the shin. Alternatively, Hirsch suggests that maybe the shin is an abbreviation for it, often is used as the word of the Shem Hashem, which is shame, as in Lushakein Shemo Shom, you see in Devarim, to rest his name there. Or also in Devarim, we find the Verochol Ame Aretz, all the people of the world will see, Ki Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha Beyirim Imcha Omimecha, that the name of Hashem is called upon you and they'll fear from you. Also in Shmuel, Asher Nikra Shem Olav, the name was called upon him. In all these places, the Shem Hashem is an expression, says Hirsch, of the nearness of Hashem that is promised us as the fruit of our complete and loyal dedication to Hashem and His Torah. So let me read you from the collected writings directly at the top of page 158. It explains that the shin comes out of the walls of the tefillin itself. It's not just an add-on. You don't glue on the letter shin. It's an outgrowth of the body that contains these four messages and the message of Torah, our geula, of our redemption from Mitzrayim, and the Torah that we receive and accept upon us as a result of becoming Hashem's avad and thanks to the geula. But as an extension of that, growing out of that, the walls of the tefillin form the shin, which is the Shem Hashem, essentially, or the allusion to Hashem. So he explains as follows. It is formed from the walls themselves. This should convey to us in graphic terms a most significant idea as follows. If we build a bias for the parshios shel tefillin, meaning, if through our own presence and life on earth, we establish on earth a place for the fulfillment of our mission and purpose as Jews, then not only the law which reveals our mission and purpose will bear the name of God, but earthly matter, shaped and utilized in accordance with the law of God, will then be elevated by virtue of our conduct into the sphere of the divine. This house, which we build for the Torah, our entire life on earth, which we will imbue with the fulfillment of the divine law and with the accomplishment of our mission and purpose as Jews, will become a bearer of the name of God. Our own existence, we will be a bearer of the name of God, the way we live, having Torah be our defining essence, our defining way of living. The realization of the ideas expressed in the Parshios will apply the seal of the divine name upon this house. By contemplating the mere walls of the house, we obtain a glimpse of what's inside. Isn't that beautiful? That's the shin. The tefillin has two sides. As we've explained already, on one side you have Kadesh and V'hoya Kiyaviyacha. On the other side you have Shema and V'hoya Im Shemoa. So on the right side, it's about our history. Hashem is our Redeemer. On the other side, Shema, V'hoya Im Shemoa, our mission. It's the Torah. It's that we have to listen to the Torah and be careful to observe it or else. So the shin on one side places the imprint of the Shem Hashem on our ultimate destinies. This is our history, both the beginning that Hashem redeemed us and throughout all of history. That's V'hoya Kiyaviyach. When you get to Eretz Yisrael, remember that you were redeemed. Remember Hashem guides you through history. The shin on the other side places the imprint of the Shem Hashem on our day-to-day actions following the Torah. So our destiny, our history is one side, and the way we live our lives because of that destiny, both of them. And think about that. The Shem Hashem comes out on both sides. So if it's visible, it means the nations of the world, when they see us, what do they see? They see the Jewish nation planted in history and how God guides them through history. Also, looking at the other Shem, the other side, the Shem Hashem shows what a Jew looks like as he observes the Torah. You see Hashem in the world by watching a Jew living by the Torah. So why is there a four-headed shin as opposed to the other side, which has a three-headed shin. So Hirsch would like to suggest that perhaps the four-sided shin are these four separate ideas. If you look, actually, each four of the compartments of the Tefillin Shel Rosh are that section which the parsha is divided into. And the top of each part of the four-headed shin is an extension of that piece. So it's the four separate concepts to dwell on. So her suggests maybe carrying out these ideas into action will become the proclamation of his name on earth. So it goes from the concepts to the other side, which is the your classic shin, which is the Shem Hashem. So the four, I'll just read you what he says here on page 159. The four-stroke shin might intend to convey the idea that if the thoughts expressed in the four passages are implemented, they merge to form the Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Translating these parshiyos into reality will become the proclamation of his name on earth. Placing the imprint of God's name upon the earthly house, After all, the four components constructed inside the house for the head tefillin to accommodate the four biblical passages in themselves form a shin with four strokes. Thus, our whole life devoted to the fulfillment of the teachings contained inside the tefillin will become the most obvious manifestation of God on earth. Mi umi kamcha zibkot su pasuk in Shmuel Beis. Umi kamcha ki Yisrael, who is like your nation? Goy echad bar, to one nation on the land. Asher holchu elokim liftos lo la'am, that God went to redeem for himself to be a nation. Ulosum lo shem, and to place for himself a name there. So God's redeeming us and us living by his Torah puts into the world the Shem Hashem. Lastly, let's talk about the knot, the Kesher Shel Tefillin, where he says that the Shel Yad is there probably just to hold the bias, the knot on the Shel Yad is there to hold the bias tightly to the upper arm. But the Shel Rosh, which, think about it, we have the two different sides of the Shel Rosh we explained. And you take the knot, it goes through the front and it goes out to the back where both sides merge. And then from the back of the neck, it then stretches over the shoulders in the opposite direction. Both sides of the tefillin, both sides of the message of the tefillin, merge at the back and then they fall over the chest and the abdomen. This Hirsch refers to as the Kesher HaBris. This is the knot of the bris, of our covenant with Hashem, that he's our Redeemer, and we live by his Torah because of that. And we let that translate. It falls over our bodies. It falls over our existence, both the physical, the heart. It goes over our bodies, our arms. That's the message. That's our side of the deal. Hashem is our Redeemer, and he gives us the Torah, and we allow all of ourselves, wherever that message falls over and onto, to completely dedicate itself to the Avodas Hashem. Lastly, why do we put the Tefillin Shel Yad on first, and then the Tefillin Shel Rosh, and then when we take it off, we take off the Tefillin Shel Rosh, and then we take off the Tefillin Shel Yad? So we always have to have the Tefillin Shel Yad on before we get to the Tefillin Shel Rosh. Why is that? Why is it that the Tefillin Shel Yad goes on first and then the Tefillin Shel Rosh, and yet when we take off the Tefillin, we take off the Rosh, but we keep on the Tefillin Shel Yad? So Hirsch explains as follows. This specification accords completely with the first great basic principle of Jewish law, Naseh v'nishma. In Judaism, practical observance, which is represented by the Tefillin Shel Yad, always takes precedence over theoretical understanding. For Judaism, the search for intellectual understanding of the law presupposes the unqualified obedience to the same law. The dedication of the hand takes precedence over the dedication of the eyes. The former is both the starting point and the goal for the latter. You follow? The former. Action is the starting point, and it's also the goal for the thinking, when I think, what is the point of thinking? Just to sit in a room somewhere and meditate? No, it's to then translate my actions back into more meaningful action. Thinking alone is not what Hashem wants. Hashem wants life. He wants Jewish life. He wants his Torah to be in action, not in some class somewhere, in some philosophy course to understand the concepts of Judaism. And when this happens, when Jews live by that, then all the nations of the world see us, the Shem Hashem actually protrudes from the tefillin, and it's a frightening thought. The Jews' observance of the mitzvahs done right, wearing tefillin, the Shem Hashem comes out, and God is visible in this world. That's our task. This is the central idea of Yiddishkeit, Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, as represented in our tefillin.